you're an idiot, you're ugly, you're fat. Literally, they say things like that. And then the person is like, obviously getting upset. And then the abuser is like, you're so sensitive. You know, I love you. I'm only joking. Oh, you're so stupid. And then again, another abuse, right? And yes. I'm like, to me, it's like, well, you know, there's a difference between teasing, you know, which is funny on both parties. It's really between teasing to verbal diarrhea. And actually, it is not funny. And when someone says to you, you don't have a sense of humor, I'm like, no, no, honey, I got the joke. It just wasn't funny. And it's not funny because it's not even a joke, actually. You mean it. And if you don't like what you're seeing, if I'm too fat, too thin, or whatever, or ugly, there's the door. And actually, God gave you a neck. It's to look the other way. So, you know, I feel really strongly about that because... Welcome back. We are on today with my guest, Shannon Higgins, on the Tool for Dish It podcast. I'm Angie S., the founder of AngieS.com, link in the show notes, where I'm a health coach. If you want to work with me, you can get in touch via the website or email me directly at hello@angie-s.com. If you fancy doing something for absolutely no money, but I will absolutely support this show, please don't forget to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes or follow on Spotify. For all the other platforms, whichever way you show love is how you can support this show. It does make a big difference and I so appreciate it. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. So I will keep the introduction to a minimum as it is a longer episode today. I brought Shannon Higgins on today to talk about gaslighting. And a quick warning, this can potentially be a very triggering episode. So if you experience any unease from this, please, 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 please contact a local mental health helpline or trauma-trained therapist. Shannon is absolutely wonderful and I learned so much with her just in these 90 minutes. So I'm really excited to introduce her to you today. Let's begin. Well, hello there, Shannon.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm good. Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for, you know, having me on here to share this really important information.
No, absolutely. Look, I just want to give you a big, big welcome and a big thank you for joining me today because I think, you know, like you said, it's such an important topic and it's really trending at the moment, you know, gaslighting and narcissism, you know, those terms are really thrown around a lot. And so I thought it'd be great to bring you on because I think we need to make a serious discernment between one, a highly destructive behavior that is abusive, to two, just labeling people who don't cater to every whim because it really invalidates those who actually really suffer through proper emotional abuse. So, which I think, you know, we have to be careful to just label people without really knowing what we're saying because it'll be like crying wolf and we need to watch out for that. And I think also because what I realized when I asked for gaslighting submissions, which I am so grateful to everyone who submitted them, when I look through them and also when I did some more research in other forums, I noticed there were definitely really horrid situations where it's absolutely understandable that someone would be scarred for a very long time and the road to recovery is very hard. But then what also surprised me is I saw submissions where people just don't really seem to have a good grasp of the reality, the context, you know, they're in. And maybe they're just being understood. Maybe the other person was just being forgetful. It's okay for a partner or parent not to hang on to your every word, you know. Some of the submissions, I was just like, so, like, what's the problem? Like, he doesn't remember you mentioned a new restaurant, you know, things like that. So like, especially I feel like if someone is the type of person who sends a novel each time, you know, via text or email, you can be certain that most people are going to be skimming over it, especially if someone's really busy. They'll be in their head going, okay, what's the actual point of your message? So I can reply to this without you getting pissed off at me. You know, there's just people, not everyone has always the bandwidth to everything about, you know, everyone. So I think it's called being considerate to other people. So maybe I think when people are just throwing out that term loosely, maybe in that situation, they're the abusive partner, ironically enough. So So I think it's very important to make, like I say, like, you know, those discernment. And so before we dive into this, please, Shannon, introduce yourself, where you live and what you do.
Okay. My name is Shannon Higgins, and I'm a licensed professional counselor supervisor, and I live in Plano, Texas, which is a suburb of the well-known Dallas, Texas. And I am in a private practice. Prior to being in private practice, I actually worked in the school systems, and I also worked at Genesis Women's Outreach, which is an agency, a nonprofit agency that serves people who have been in domestic violence or sexual abuse situations.
Yeah.
And so we worked with people who were survivors, so it didn't matter how long they had been in those relationships or who were currently in abusive relationships. And that was my, you know, first dose of being a therapist. So it was quite overwhelming.
Yeah.
But once I, you know, got my feet wet, it became my passion.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, where my roots were planted as a therapist and how I came into the specialization. But interestingly enough, why I became a crusader is what I call it, for narcissistic abuse, is I actually was a victim of narcissistic abuse and well after, you know, specializing. And I call it that I am a survivor to thriver. So I went through it personally, and I just wanted to pursue the research because it was so insidious. I had no clue what was happening until I left the relationship.
Yeah.
And because of that, I just had to dig my feet in and do absolutely, you know, an immersion of research because I didn't want others to go through this. But I actually did go to marriage counseling, and I was seen as the actual instigator by the therapist. And wow. I was put in a really dangerous situation. And so I knew that I also needed to educate mental health professionals on how to detect narcissistic abuse.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for that, Shannon. So many things you said there that I've just been writing things down. First of all, thank you for being so open about that, because you said that you experienced the narcissistic abuse after you specialized, right?
Yeah.
Which shows, yeah. And thank you so much for saying that, because I think what people sometimes don't understand, this is why I think it's important to make the discernment, because it is so powerful that even someone who is a professional in that when you're in the situation, you can't always protect yourself and see what's going on. So yeah. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
And two as well, when you mentioned about the therapist, I find it's about a whole different topic, so I'm not going to get into it, but I found that sometimes if you go to therapy, whether it's like, you know, couples therapy or family therapist, a therapist can really make things, if they don't know what they're doing, if they know, they can really save lives. And if they don't, they can really make things a lot worse. So again, that's a great point to bring about. And I was just wondering something when you were saying about when you, it's like, I guess if I understand correctly, it was with your ex-husband, you experienced that?
Yes.
Yeah. Was when you said, you know, like, when you finally got out, you kind of, because it sounded like you almost didn't know what was going on. And is it that sense of when you are, I'm jumping ahead a bit, we're going to reel back, but is there a sense of like pure confusion when you are on the receiving end of narcissistic abuse and gaslighting?
Absolutely. Mm. It is so crazy making that you don't even know what's going on. A lot of people will call it spinning.
Yeah.
Call it, you know, a fog. Therapists, we call it cognitive dissonance. And most of the recovery process is really trying to figure out what the hell happened. You know, what was I going through?
Yeah.
And, you know, you feel like you were completely, I just like to use the word bamboozled.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know how. And a lot of my clients and myself will constantly repeat, how did I get into this mess?
Yeah.
Because, you know, the women and the men are very intelligent people and they're very successful people. And they're not, you know, what a stereotype you would think would be to get into these relationships. So that's what makes it even more puzzling. Mm-hmm. And so just like you had mentioned, you know, that I had all this, you know, training and I landed in a relationship like this.
Yeah.
So that absolutely made me stay in the relationship longer because I was like, why am I in this relationship? I should know better. What's going on?
Yeah.
And so the shame keeps people in these relationships longer as well.
Oh, yeah.
So that is part of that crazy making, the gaslighting.
Yeah.
And so you actually do think you're the cause.
Oh, you think you're the bad one. Absolutely. This is going to get so meaty. Okay. So before we get into all of that, I've got so, this is fantastic. Can we just first just defining some of the terms? So can you tell us the difference between narcissism and gaslighting and what each of them mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So narcissism is actually a spectrum disorder. And there is on one side of the spectrum, healthy narcissism. And then to the extreme other side, we call it the dark triad. And that's where there's criminal activity, antisocial personality disorder, psychopathy, sociopathy. And then, you know, we call it the malignant narcissist, the Machiavellian narcissist. And so that's the pathology. So narcissism is the actual pathology.
Like a serial killer would be a narcissist, for example?
Yeah, they all, you know, people who are, you know, doing those criminal acts have a level of narcissistic behaviors. And if they're, and they're usually at that level, they have narcissistic personality disorder.
So I guess you have to have no empathy for others.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There is, at that level, there is no empathy. And so that's what narcissism is. So, you know, it depends on where you are on the spectrum of how severe, you know, your narcissism is. And then gaslighting.
Oh, so hang on. So we've got, so you said the spectrum is a healthy to like the dark triad, but what is a definition of narcissist? Like, what is a narcissist? Because all I know is like, you know, navel gazing. That's why I was like, you know, no empathy. But can you, what would be a definition so that we know also where on the spectrum?
Sure. So someone who actually has the full diagnosis of narcissistic personality disorder that comes from our diagnostic manual, which is the DSM-5, they have 9 characteristic traits. They have to meet at least 7 of these criteria, and they're absolutely harmful to others. One is there's grandiosity. They have a grandiose sense of their self. Mm-hmm. They're preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success. They think they, you know, have this beauty about themselves. They have all this power and brilliance. And they also believe that they're very special and that some people they should associate with and others they shouldn't be in their, you know, circle at all. Mm-hmm. And they actually require excessive admiration. They have a huge sense of entitlement, and they're interpersonally, this is one of the most harmful parts, they're interpersonally exploitive. They lack empathy. They're envious of others, and they believe others are envious of them, actually. And they're very arrogant. And so that's the actual personality disorder. Mm-hmm. And as I said, you know, you have that spectrum. So if you go towards the healthy narcissism, there are some people who have narcissistic traits. So they may have 1 to 4 of the criteria that I just read to you.
Up to 4?
Yeah.
Okay. That's still healthy. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, you know, the further you go towards healthy narcissism, the more likely there's opportunity for change and transformation. Mm-hmm.
And then I guess the more they have, like once they have up to 9, like I guess 7 plus, you in the dark triad, the psychopath, the sociopath. And so, okay. So healthy narcissist. So I guess, is it because you mean like it's, I guess it's healthy to have, you know, I guess envision a successful future. It's healthy to you know, to have a little bit of envy is part of, is maybe not healthy, but it's part of human nature, showing, you know, what it is that we desire. We can be envious of someone who has that. Is that what you mean? That's why.
So the healthy narcissism, you know, what that basically means is that we have that ability that we need to take care of ourselves, you know, in order to survive. And so, you know, healthy narcissism is about having that strong sense of being an individual. And then we need that ability to self-reflect and take responsibility for our actions. And so that's the healthy side. We have a full capacity for empathy.
Where would the person who's like someone's partner who is being narcissist, but is not obviously a serial killer, would they go into, is it like, where in the spectrum are they? Are they like in the middle, would you say?
Or so the traits that I told you, they have like up to four of the criteria. That's in the middle. And then the personality, like the character disorder, is right next to that. And then next to that is the dark triad.
Okay, so the middle one would be someone who's like an abusive partner. They'll have like between 4 to 7.
Yes.
Okay, but a normal person is up to 4, and then 7 to 9, forget it. That's like,
Yeah.
Run.
Run. Yeah. Run for your life.
Okay, thank you. So that was the narcissism. And so for gaslighting, what's the definition of that?
So gaslighting is actually a sophisticated and methodical way that these individuals use to have someone doubt their memory, their perceptions, and even their own sanity. And they're also intentional methods to do this. And they have several different ways that they do this. And so again, you'll often hear people say crazy making. And so that's why this is one of their favorite methods to use with others.
Are you saying narcissists are the one who gaslight people?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, we'll probably get to this later, as you and I've talked about, but you don't really have to have that diagnosis. So I don't know how much you want me to get into that, but
oh no, absolutely. So
you can be toxic and gaslight.
Right. You don't have to be a narcissist. You can just, okay. I hear you.
You can just be someone who's toxic, who's, you know, kind of in the middle, like you and I talked about.
Yeah.
So you don't have a diagnosis, but you're a, you know, really unhealthy person that's had a lot of chinks in your armor. You haven't done any, you know, self-reflection, and you don't consider other people in your choices.
Yeah. And I think that makes sense, because I think with the gaslighting, because I think some people gaslight out of their, not because they have a self or grandiosity, not because they're overly confident and because they think they're God's gift to this world. I think some people gaslight out of their own hurt and insecurity, and out of that, they really hurt other people.
Yes.
It will gaslight them. I've never witnessed it. And it's like, it took me a long time to realize that person is just hurt and it's so toxic, but they're definitely not, I wouldn't describe them as a narcissist. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay. So that helps to already put a little bit into context, because what I want to talk about is gaslighting here in this episode. And I guess.
You bet.
Yeah. And so one of the reasons why I was asking you about narcissism, because a lot of the time, when I, especially in those submissions, when I'm asking people or when I research online about gaslighting, people kept saying, it's a narcissist, a narcissist, a narcissist. I'm like, not everybody, not that many people can be a narcissist. So I just, I'm really scared. I'm like, I'm off to Mars. I'm getting on the space shuttle, or maybe I'm a narcissist too then. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I want to know, how do people become gaslighter? And by gaslighting, like you were saying, you know, people literally making you questioning your sanity, your memory, basically manipulating and lying and make you think you're the crazy one. Okay. So you mentioned it was intentional.
Yeah.
I do want to ask, can it sometimes happen unintentionally? That sometimes people like that as a person and they don't intend to?
Not really.
Okay.
Because then we wouldn't label it as gaslighting. Because, you know, there are some people that just aren't good communicators, but you can talk, you can have a conversation with them and you can seek clarity and clarity will be met, you know?
Right.
And so that's why gaslighting is just so deliberate. And you can really tell that difference, you know, between that and somebody who's just not a good communicator. They may be, you know, bitter, dysfunctional, but you can continue to try to work that out with them. You can actually have a dialogue with them. But somebody who's, you know, toxic, who's got character disorder, they don't have the ability to dialogue. And so that's the difference.
You know, I was asking this because I was hoping that you would say yes, because I'm thinking of obviously particular people, and I was just hoping you'd say yes, because then if it's not intentional, you can look at them differently. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely, Angie, because that is the most popular question that I get. Because the people that are in these relationships, whether they're with an intimate partner or a friend or, you know, a work, you know, relationship, no one wants to believe that. Because that's like one of the major disappointments. How can this person deliberately want to hurt me?
I mean, do we know why and how people become gaslighter?
We do. You know, it's interesting because our mental health profession, people always have thought of it as just, you know, all you do is talk to people. And they've never really understood that it is based, you know, on science, and we do research. And but there still hasn't always been a clear-cut answer, because we've had that, you know, debate about nurture, nature. And in this case, we have both of those. So you have a major influence of environment, and you have the influence of learned behavior. And we do now believe that there is some genetic disposition for personality disorders.
Yeah. A little bit like, in a way, how your body regulates emotions can also be genetic, and, you know.
Yeah, there's a whole field out now called epigenetics.
Yeah. So where would be, so if it is, you know, so the part that's nature, you know, aka genetic, there isn't, you know, that unless there's medication for it, there isn't much else that can be done, but I'm assuming. But if it is a learned behavior, can you explain a bit, like, how does that take place? Is it to do with parenting? And, like, how does someone become a gaslighter with nurture or the wrong nurture?
You know, sometimes I dislike always saying it's the parents, because I'm a mom.
So
I'm like, please don't do that. But sometimes it really is. And what we have found through research is that people who are, you know, challenged with the character disorder, the commonalities are that they either experienced some kind of abuse in their childhood, and the abuse may have been in an extreme, excessive way. And it didn't have to just be like, you know, physical abuse. It didn't have to be severe psychological abuse. It really could have been neglect. And they might have had everything in the world, right? They could have grown up in a really fantastic, wealthy home, but they were neglected. They might have had all the comforts in the world, but they didn't have parents that parented them. And then on the other side, the parents may have overindulged them, and they got everything that they wanted. There weren't any boundaries. And the parents were around, but they might have just been a, you know, jolly good friend. And that is what we've also, you know, noticed there. So with the other end, we've also seen that addiction can be part of it as well.
Well, and like, addiction can turn someone into having gaslighting behavior.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've actually got a further submission around that.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. So yeah. 50% of people that suffer from addiction will have some of these traits.
Yeah. But that's because they don't want to be, it's like, yeah. I mean, it's like covering up for, like you'll do anything to get that fixed or whatever it is. Yeah. Actually, just to put context to that, I want to read a submission around that.
Yeah.
Hang on, let me just find it. Okay. It is funny. Uh-oh. It's not funny to admit, but it's the stuff that her ex would her, you know, her ex husband or partner would say. It was hilarious. When you read it from as an outsider, you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
So this is a submission. She said, by the way, I'm totally not against smoking weed. I mean, I've smoked weed before, you know, it's not about weed. It's just about the guy obviously has a problem with it. Uh-huh. So her subject line was, ex had pot addiction. So he would tell me he didn't even smoke it. He spent all of our money on it. We spent money for kids and food on it. And he said I was a nagging bitch. He would come home reeking of it, laughing, saying that, you're fucking crazy. I don't smoke it. Watch him go out to the car and smoke it, begging him to please just be honest with me. Wow, you're so fucking crazy. I only lit my lighter to look for something. Oh, and he would twist it until we were fighting about something else. My daughter confronted me when she found it on the counter. He laughed and said she had no idea what she was looking at, then continued laughing. It was spices. Years later, out of the blue, she said, Mom, it was marijuana. I said, I know, your dad lies. That was just one example of many. But he would say one thing one day, deny everything the next, and call me crazy. I learned to do everything over text. So when he would say I didn't say that, I would send him his text and he would just stop responding like it never happened or blame me. It's completely crazy making. So that situation, it's like, it is kind of funny because I can almost picture him going around just high and just laughing it off, but it must be so aggravating. And the guy just lies out of his ass basically and says, I mean, my favorite one is that I only lit my lighter to look for something.
Yes.
You know, and I guess that's what I mean. He's probably not a bad person because it doesn't sound like he's actually, you know, hitting her or doing anything crazy. But like you said, his addiction or his shame around addiction makes him say all kinds of stupid stuff and turns it on her to make her think she's crazy or trying to make her think she's crazy.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's in an effort to deflect from him.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to quit, right?
Right.
And so if he turns it on her, he can continue to do what he wants to do.
And continue to use money that's supposed to go for their children or child and food towards weed, you know? So, yeah. Have you experienced people who have that with their parents?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because that is like, must be such a head fuck, right? For lack of a nicer word, I'm sorry. Why does it happen? Why do parents do that to their kids? And two, do you have an example? And three, how do people come out of it? Because are you supposed to just abandon your family? Like, you know, I mean, what do you do?
Well, Angie, don't apologize for saying a term like head fuck. Because honestly, it is that like pervasive, insidious, and people will call this kind of abuse soul murder and emotional rape because it's just that bad. And so many people who grow up with that kind of abuse end up in these relationships later. And with no intention of doing it.
Of course.
And because you're in that situation growing up and you fantasize about, you know, I will never, ever, you know, marry someone like this. And then, you know, what happens is, and this is later in your, you know, questioning, but the attraction to similar is comfortable.
Yeah, we fall in love with what's familiar.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so, but it does happen with parents. And sadly, the statistic for mothers is higher than fathers.
Yeah.
And so they do survive. They figure out how to survive. And during that time, it works. But unfortunately, it doesn't work in their adult life. And so they really struggle to have healthy interpersonal relationships all around. many of them later in their life suffer from complex PTSD, and that's not recognized in our DSM-5, but those of us who specialize with trauma all recognize it. There are books about complex PTSD, because what that is it's for people who have endured abuse day in and day out. PTSD is if people have experienced abuse one or two times, but people who have lived in those kind of situations, if you think about it, if you're being neglected, scapegoated, you know, every day for your whole childhood, that is absolutely going to eviscerate your self-concept. And so you're also trying to survive that parent. So your whole identity is around that. Mm. And so that's why many of those people come to us in their adult life trying to figure out who they are, because all they've done is been in, you know, survivor mode. And so a good example would be a client that I'm working with right now. She's already raised her kids and she's done a really good job at it. She spent most of her childhood being buddy-buddy with her mom. Her mom would have several partners come to the home. She would have lines of Coke on the table. She ended up taking her daughter to concerts and getting her drunk. She didn't even supervise any of her schooling. She let her have boyfriends home with her. It was absolutely no boundaries at all. So she came to me having panic attacks, really not being able to function. She couldn't sleep. She couldn't even go out of her house because the symptoms were just that uncomfortable. And she didn't know why. She had no clue why she was going through this. And that's because when we experience trauma, we often experience the symptoms and not the memories. So when we did an assessment, I learned about how her mother raised her. Her parents were divorced, and her younger sister chose to live with dad, who was an alcoholic, and she chose to stay with her mom because it happened when she was 13, and it would be cool to be with mom because she could get by with anything.
Yeah.
And so she didn't know. Didn't know what the impact would be later in life, right? So that would be an example.
But can you? This is not to try and minimize her experience, but what I'm hearing is from that patient of yours is that she wasn't parented, but I don't hear right. That she was being gaslighted, as in, no, I never gave you Coke. No, what do you mean? I never said you could bring boyfriend home and then give her condoms at the same time. Like, how is that gaslighted?
That happened all the time.
Okay. So that wasn't clear to me. So how?
Yeah. So I didn't tell you that part. So that part was just to show you no parenting.
Yeah.
But also to introduce addiction at such a young age.
Oh yeah. No, neglect.
Yeah. So mom was that way behind closed doors, but in public, she acted like mother of the year.
Oh.
And so
shocked
no
at her
knew.
Daughter's behavior? Like, would she act shocked at her? Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Oh yeah. And she had to, you know, act like this perfect girl. And so then what happened is she developed severe perfectionism. And so she ended up with an eating disorder. She ended up with substance abuse issues because the confusion, and we call that double binding messages, and it's the same thing as gaslighting. And so that confusion of, you know, which person do I believe? The one behind closed doors or the one that's in public?
Is it just, I guess, to bring a bit of clarity onto that, is it a bit like, for example, like you said, behind closed doors, we have a secret and we are accomplice, or we think we are a team in that secret. But on the outside world, you throw me out of the bus and you say, that's terrible. I don't even know why my daughter's doing these things, and I don't understand her behavior. And actually, I don't know why she lies all the time. Would that be... Is that kind of thing? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what would be the best step forward? Because I mean, for the daughter who's now, she's now an adult and a mother herself, but are there ways to keep a relationship for her with her mother and to keep protecting herself so that she doesn't crumble her world again? Is there a way for people like that who survive gaslighting to keep a relationship with a family member? Or do people normally have to cut strings? Like what do you see? What do you normally advise?
So in therapy, we don't really tell people what to do. Mm. You know, we actually guide them, but this is something that we ask them what they want to do. And we obviously will explain you can't get healthy in a sick environment. And so in this particular situation, we do say it's okay if you do not want to interact with her, if you need to set that boundary and not have her in your life because of this behavior. She's not going to change. And we know that because of the test of time. And that every time my client interacts with her mom, she's still gaslighting her to this day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then she'll come to me in, you know, this absolutely chaotic state where she's having panic attacks and she can't sleep. And this is even on medications. And so, however, this particular client doesn't want to do that because her mother has no support system. And obviously that's because of her personality. And so she has made a decision to be in her mother's life, but she has also made a decision to design boundaries the way she needs to protect herself.
Yeah. Oh, I can hear that. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's so difficult because I think, especially, I mean, I've never been married, so I don't know how it must have felt like for you, Shannon, with your ex-husband. Mm-hmm. And obviously I'm not in your patient's shoe either, but I can only, you know, I think like when someone is so close to you, when it's blood or intimacy, you know, there's that sense obviously of confusion. Like you said, you know, cognitive dissonance, is that the official word?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's also, it's heartbreaking. Like it feels like someone's literally putting their hand around your heart and crushing you. And you cannot actually, it's almost like a paralyzing feeling of like, it can literally ruin your week. Like in terms of like, you can't get things done because you're in such a bad mental space. Is that a way to recognize if you've been gaslighted? Are those feelings, I guess, like symptoms of being on the receiving end of gaslighting?
Oh yeah. You actually just feel like high levels of anxiety. There is that constant state of just feeling crazy. And you really do think something's wrong with you. They have absolutely convinced you that you're the instigator, that you're the reason why the marriage is in that state or the relationship is that way. And so you're constantly in your head, you know, about how to help this marriage, what's wrong with me. And so you're really checked out. And so you're not doing much of anything well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it impacts you so much, right? I mean, on the outside looking in, would you say often the person who's gaslighting tends to stay calm more often, but you're the one who goes a bit crazy? Like who, you know, because you're like...
Yes.
You know, you're the emotional one. And the other person is like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, why are you getting so sensitive about?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so
it's fucked up, isn't it? Mm.
It's so messed up.
Yeah.
And it's so hard for other people. So for instance, you know how I explained my client's situation, it doesn't really sound very bad to other people. And when I was explaining certain things, what was happening in my home, it didn't sound bad at all. And some of my friends would say, well, talk to him like this, or have you done this? What about this? And so those were also things that made me think it is my fault. So I was even being reinforced by other people unknowingly. They were just trying to help. But the way that things happen, they are just so subtle, but they're happening every single day. And so they sound so innocent to people that aren't there.
So okay. So in a relationship, intimate relationship,
mm-hmm.
How would you tell someone, how can they tell the signs? Because we want to avoid making the wrong assumptions that someone truly is gaslighting us.
Well, there are definite, signs of while you're in it, and, some signs to look for even when you're dating. But you know how I kept talking about crazy making and the fog and cognitive dissonance?
Yeah.
So, there's that behavior that they have that they will often tell you, and I've mentioned this about, I thought that I was the one that was causing all the problems in the relationship. And then I had, my support system, encouraging me to talk to him differently.
Yeah.
So he will even say, or she, because it's almost like 50-50 men and women, but that I'm crazy. So they blame the other one. So I'll often say the one who's getting abused is the target. So the abuser will often blame their target of being crazy, that it's their fault. So any grievances that, the person brings up are not listened to because they're the ones that are to blame. And so there's also what they do. You kind of mentioned this earlier, but they will project everything that they do onto their target. So like the gaslighting, the manipulation, they will put everything onto their target, and that spins the target because they're like, wait a minute, those are the things you do. They also will accuse the target of being insecure when they actually do see suspecting behavior of cheating. They usually do have what we call supply. And what that is that they will have other women or other men or other interests that takes them away from being engaged and plugged into the relationship. So all of that basically operates like an affair. So when that's brought up, they will actually accuse the target of being insecure and jealous. But it's very obvious that this is what they're doing. So yeah. They won't accept accountability.
Yeah.
And they'll also tell them that they're too sensitive, you're overreacting. And this is even in the face of evidence. And you kind of mentioned that in the story about the guy who was lighting the lighter.
Yeah, to look for something in the car. I was like, I'm going to be using this in another setting. This is genius.
Yes.
But it's so crazy, right? Yeah.
It's that obvious, but they will still lie about it and accuse the target of the behavior. Like, you're so sensitive.
You're crazy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And so,
yeah,
yeah. But that even makes the target feel crazier. Because you're trying to explain, but look. And they will defend themselves to the death. And they'll minimize their behaviors.
Mm.
So, and they're often horrific. And they'll just say, it was just a joke. Don't you have a sense of humor?
Mm.
And that is actually them trying to act like it's not abuse. But it is abuse.
Actually, do you know what? I have a clap back of that stuff because I hear this a lot. And I say I hear this a lot. I've seen in forums, in submissions, all kinds of stuff where people are like, they're literally being insulted by their partner saying, you're an idiot, you're ugly, you're fat. Literally, they say things like that. And then the person is like, obviously getting upset. And then the abuser is like, you're so sensitive. You know, I love you. I'm only joking. Oh, you're so stupid. And then again, another abuse, right? And
yes.
I'm like, to me is like, well, you know, there's a difference between teasing, you know, which is funny on both parties. It's really between teasing to verbal diarrhea, and actually it is not funny. And when someone says to you, you don't have a sense of humor, I'm like, no, honey, I got the joke. It just wasn't funny. And it's not funny because it's not even a joke, actually. You mean it. And if you don't like what you're seeing, if I'm too fat, too thin, or whatever, or ugly, there's the door. And actually, God gave you a neck is to look the other way. So, you know, I feel really strongly about that because I hate when people are, you know, using humor. Because I love humor. I'm an ex stand-up comic. I watch comedy all the time. And
yeah,
everything has a context. But things that you say on stage, things that I say, you know, sometimes in my newsletter or website, whatever it is, it's not something that I would say to one, to a boss, to my mother, to a lover. Like, there are contexts, you know what I'm saying? There's a context in everything. And, I just realized something when you were saying earlier about the abuser, you know, projecting on the target and saying, you know, you're crazy, you're too sensitive, you're overreacting. Something clicked for me. And it was that, because you mentioned earlier that, you know, we are attracting towards familiar. We are, you know, reliving part of our childhood through our, you know, first wives, husbands, or long-term relationship, whatever you want to call it. And I think maybe why some people stay in these situations where for other people will be like, wait, that's crazy. While you're taking this is because actually maybe that person, the target, is so used to be told growing up that they are too sensitive, they're overreacting because their parents are gaslighting them. So for them, it's like, well, yeah, of course, I'm the bad one. I'm always the bad one. So yeah, this makes sense. And actually, please love me. I'm going to do better. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that I angered you, or that I thought that you were smoking weed in the car and using all our kids' allowance for it. I'm really, really sorry. And I'm sorry I saw you like the, you know, your doobie.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I think, do you think that's what's going on psychologically?
In many cases it is. Mm. And there's a Dr. Ross Rosenberg. He created the concept and wrote a book titled The Human Magnet Syndrome. And that's exactly what he's describing, that, you know, we're going to gravitate to what's familiar. And so, and you had mentioned the codependent and the narcissist.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, they both take care of each other's childhood wounds, their dysfunctions. Yeah.
And for those who don't know what we're talking about, it's just because I did that. The question was, if people with narcissist tendencies or people who gaslight attract people with codependent tendencies, is something I heard someone say. So that's what you're referring to? Is that what
Yes. And so for many, that is the case. But in fact, like I had said earlier, they look for people who will make them look good. So they purposely target people who are successful, attractive, that they've got their stuff together.
The gaslighters.
Yeah, that's their smoke and mirrors.
Oh.
Because they aren't normal. I hate using that word. Because who is?
They're not healthy. They're toxic.
Is it yes. Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So they need someone to help them achieve that, you know, look. And so it's not always the case. And everybody has, you know, a level of codependence. But truly what happens by being in this relationship is it creates an excessive amount of codependence biochemically because of that crazy making.
You mean because people get so, they start to doubt themselves so much, they cannot possibly leave the relationship because they need that relationship to be whole first?
Yeah, so there's a cycle of abuse that happens, and it, you know how if it's a cycle, it's going around in circles, and it's happening so intensely and so often that it actually changes someone's biochemistry. And so they actually have this addiction, and we call it trauma bonding or Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. Yeah,
to their abuser. And so that's then another reason why they stay. And so that eventually happens anyway, if they weren't to begin with.
So you can actually become you may not have been a typical, I guess what you'd say, textbook target in the past, but you meet the wrong person at the right time in your life where you may be in a bad spot or whatever, and then things spiral around. Maybe the chemistry is amazing. I mean, usually, you know, the sex would be amazing to stay that way. Maybe, you know, whatever, something's keeping you there. And effectively, if you stay in something so unhealthy for too long, it will change your biochemical, some of your biochemical pathway so that you actually become addicted. You can't leave that person. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And so it can take people up to 7 times to leave the relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when people say, I would just leave, you know, why do they stay? Well, there's a scientific answer for that. So that becomes one of my biggest pet peeves. And I was like, do you have time? Because I have a long answer for you.
I mean, that's the thing is that I understand. I mean, I used to understand, you know, why people stayed in toxic relationship, if it's especially if they've been in a particular, if they, especially if their upbringing was in a particular way. And again, like you said, it's not always in the obvious ways, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, people are very fooled by smoking mirrors. But I didn't realize that those things could also happen to people who haven't got those bad associations.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not common information. So, you know, most people don't know that. And so that's why it takes, you know, professional help or investigating it to understand that. And, you know, because really from the outside, it does look easy to leave. And when you hear what's happening, you would say, why don't, you know, you just leave. So it does take, you know, researching or understanding, you know, from a professional that it's much more complicated than that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's complicated. I mean, even I didn't realize actually the breadth of what it is, you know, until like, you know, you pointed out a few things here today. I was just wondering, would you mind if I'd like to read a few submissions that I received around gaslighting and get your opinion on it? Because some of them I don't think are.
No, I would love that.
Gaslighting, yeah. And then we can go back into the question. I think it'd be nice just to sort of jazz it up a little bit. So with real life examples. So,
and that helps people relate, you know?
Yes, exactly. So I'm going to read you one. I'm not going to tell you what my opinion is.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you tell me if that's gaslighting or not. Now, again, like the other one with the weed addiction, they're not my words. Sometimes I find it hard to read, but I'm just going to read out exactly how it was submitted. Okay.
So, okay.
Okay. And by the way, thank you so much for submitting this. So here goes. So I met this guy. He was so nice. He came out immediately the next day to take me out on a date late after I got off work, to take me out every day after. Okay. So I think what she's saying is that this guy straight away after they talked, probably online dating, he took her out straight away the next day. It was late after, you know, he took her out late after work. And then from there, he took her out every day after that. We ended up being sexual, then started using title, which I think she means like, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend. Then within the week, he said that he loved me. A month went by, bought me a car. Then he went back home to his home state where he asked me and my kids to move over. Then to move with him. Then 2 months being long distance relationship. I think she means that there were 2 months long distance relationship. Then he asked her to move over. He then got mad at something I texted because he stopped doing what he'd done in the beginning. Then days later told me we didn't mesh. He found someone else, thought that I was being too clingy and obsessive, and he didn't want someone who makes him feel like he is her whole world. End of submission. So I didn't do it very much justice. Like that was really, I couldn't read it out, but... What are your thoughts on that? Did it make sense? Did it even make sense?
Actually, it did.
Okay.
Because that's kind of how it is when you read someone else's work. So I really got it. And that is a classic case. And I'll tell you why. Because...
See, I thought it wasn't, but I'll tell you why. Okay, interesting.
No.
Go on.
I'll tell you why, because this is how you can tell for the... dating part, like, I'm sorry, I just hit my chair. So what happens is the beginning of the cycle, they do a lot of they're very intoxicating in the beginning and they come on way hard. And so there's a lot of idealization and we call it love bombing for a reason.
Yeah.
And so he love bombed her.
Yeah.
And look how fast that was.
Yeah.
You know, he bought her a car in a month.
Yeah.
And so, and then he was quick to discard her the minute she called him out. And that's what happens. So what that meant is that she had no right to express a grievance to him. And in a healthy relationship, that would have been an opportunity for a dialogue, whether they would end up agreeing or not.
Yeah.
But when she brought up just an opinion, a grievance, he cut her off. He actually said that she was, what was it, too much?
Oh, yeah. She was clingy and obsessive and didn't want someone to make him feel like he was her whole world.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is what he was doing, right?
Yeah.
So there's the projection.
So I agree with you with love bombing. I don't think it's specifically gaslighting. I think it's a whirlwind and he's silly completely. I mean, I think it's wrong from the get-go, but we've all been taken up in whirlwind. I've been in a whirlwind too. And like literally also completely dumped like that, crazy. But I think a couple of things to me was that one, because I agree, I think his behavior is off, but I also think I believe in taking responsibility. So I don't know how old this person is. And, you know, but in my opinion, is like, it's in the phrasing. It's in when she says, I texted because he stopped doing what he'd done in the beginning. So to me, what that says to me is, you know, and obviously at the beginning, they're still in the beginning, by the way. So obviously I understand why she may bring something up, but the responsibility part is that we cannot expect someone to, you know, let's say the first 3 months of courtship are not going to be the same month 7 to 10. You know what I mean? Like it's impossible to keep up with the same. And also maybe he was busy doing something. Now I'm not, the thing is, I don't like the sound of him anyway. So it sounds like I'm defending him, but I don't like the sound of him at all. But I mean, there's also this part of like, if you are moving, uprooting your whole family, your kids to go and see him after, you know, I'm a bit unclear on the timeline. You are making him your whole world because you're moving your kids over. So in a way that is true, but two, like, I mean, I don't know if we have the whole context obviously, but it is off. It's super, it definitely sounds toxic, but I don't know if he, I don't know which part of it is the gaslighting part, if that makes sense.
It does. It absolutely does. So the gaslighting part is the part where he projects his behaviors onto her, that he says to her.
Oh, yeah, because he was obsessive about her. Oh, my God. Yeah. Do you know, I don't even realize it because I've been in that situation. That's why I'm like defending him, because I've been the person, I've been her. I mean, I don't have children, but I've been her where I'm their whole world. And all of a sudden, you know, I have a bad day and it's over.
Yeah.
So and I thought it was me. I thought it was me. This is why I don't see it in this. That's why I don't see it in her. That's why I'm like, well, you know, take responsibility, which yes, always, you have to always be responsible for yourself. But
yeah,
that's why I'm not seeing it.
Well, and I wanted to get to that too, because what you're doing though, I think is really good because, you know, you're wanting to help your audience. And I think it's so responsible to take a look at both parties here. And so we just looked at his behavior. And so I've kind of pointed out what to look at with him and his behavior. So with her, what would be important for her now, because she submitted that, is to learn that relationships take time in order to build a healthy relationship. And so now to understand that if someone comes on really strong, that's called love bombing.
Yeah.
And that's a really gigantic flag. That's not just a red flag. It is the hugest flag that you could ever see. And buying you a car within a month that's still a flag. And, you know, one of my clients actually came up with, she'll call it pin that. And so that, you know, you don't just jump to conclusions and think all people are bad. You're not always skeptical. She'll just say pin that, because some people will have whirlwind romances, but these days you really do have to be careful. And so that would be, you know, pin that. But moving within 2 months and you have a family,
I know,
you really have to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, because you do have to be responsible for your family and
for yourself
now
too.
She could understand.
Yeah.
Now she could, you know, this is a hindsight thing, but that's that why these, you know, men, and there's even women that do this, they're so intoxicating and they act like the perfect date. And so that's how people get sucked into these relationships.
You know, it's funny because I remember after my, you know, this whirlwind, it was in 2012. But the thing was that I remember, I was really wary after that of anyone who was coming on too strong. But at the same time, I was like, I did not want to dismiss it to other people who around me. There was a couple of friends who were having whirlwind, who, by the way, one of them is married, 2 kids. I mean, it wasn't without problem.
Yeah. So it is possible, right?
It is possible. And also, because I wrote down, like, there's, you know, Coco and Ice. I think she moved over to him. I don't know if you know, but Coco and Ice, they have like this show, right? And she moved over a month in, she moved over with him. And they're like, you know, I haven't seen the show in years, but when I was used to watch it all the time, I was like, they're the cutest thing. They're so, but you know, like, they're so in love, you know? And so it, sometimes it does work.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll read you another one. Again, I'm not going to tell you what I think.
Okay. I love it.
Mm-hmm. So my ex used to say he was taking XYZ out of the account to pay bills. Tell me the bills were paid, said utility will get shut off, and he would swear to me up and down he paid it and the company was mistaken. He used to hide my own stuff from me, fave earrings or jewelry, and act like he had no idea where it could be. Had full-on gossip conversations with me about friends of mine, about how I can't trust them, and in the same day would be on the phone with them telling them he was worried about me and my friendship with them because I'd been bad-mouthing them all day. Okay, there's definitely gaslighting.
You don't want to go first?
I wrote down next to a defo gas, like I would call it gas, definitely gaslighting. I mean, that is so disgusting.
Yeah, isn't that just weird?
So disgusting.
Yeah.
So fucking disgusting. Yeah.
That would be, you know, that total spinning.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah.
That's my clinical opinion. What the hell?
Yeah. What the hell? Well, exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know, I think it happens a lot more than we think. That particular scenario. This is not the first time I hear something like this. You know, I think it may be a little bit of a relief for, I don't know your marital status, but like, I'm single. I'm not really dating at the moment. And it's like, but I'm like, you know, maybe it's a relief. Like, just because people are in a partnership does not mean they're happy.
I know, right?
You know?
And often we want what we don't have.
Yes. So we've got to be careful what you wish for.
Yes.
All right. So we have to be specific when we write down what we want. So
yeah.
I'll read you another one. Okay. So my husband gaslights a lot. I know I've told him things, not even necessarily important things, random tidbits of info. Then when I refer to them at a later date, he denies all knowledge. Example, a new Indian/Turkish kebab restaurant opened up in town. I messaged him the link on Facebook Messenger. I tagged him in the post. I had a conversation with him about it, how it was a strange combination, but we both love kebabs, so we'll have to try it. 2 weeks later, me, hey, shall we try that new Indian place? Him, what new Indian place? I showed him the messages and he continued to swear black and blue. We had never had a conversation and he hadn't seen those messages. End of the submission. What do you think?
Oh, that's innocent.
Thank you.
That's totally innocent.
That's,
yeah.
Thank you.
People are so busy now.
Yeah.
And we are flooded by email and social media.
And Facebook is the worst. How are you going to see like a post that you tagged in?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's insanity just by how much we're flooded. So our memory in that context is, that's not gaslighting.
Yeah. And she says he gaslights a lot. I'm like, I feel sorry for him because she's, I mean, I'm so sorry. Thank you for the submission, but come on now. Like that it sounds like a little, that you may, honestly, I don't, not even with friends, do I expect them to remember every single text I've sent them.
No.
I don't expect it. I'm like, okay, well, it was a restaurant. And also she says Indian place. She didn't say Indian Turkish kebab. I mean, I don't know. I mean, even I was like, is that the same one? Oh, yeah. I mean.
Well, just, and what she's doing.
Does it matter?
Is,
I mean, you know.
Well, and, you know, what she can learn from that is how important it is for her to circle back with him. Because he has a poor memory that, you know, he also, it sounds like, doesn't do active listening. And most people don't. And I hate to say that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've even been at a like continuing education with a bunch of therapists, and we have to do active listening and we're horrible at it. Yeah. So and that's most of our job, you know? So that in that case, it just sounds like she needs to get that he's not a good listener. And so she needs to circle back with him.
Yeah. So I have another submission here. So, okay. Again, I'm not telling you what I think. Okay. This one. To this day, I couldn't give you specifics. That's how fucked up it was. But I landed up wishing I had the camera following us. And I also used to press record on my phone sometimes, just because I was always in complete shock with the way things went down and denied and turned around. Or we would have complete conversations, and 2 minutes later, he acted like he knew nothing about what we had just discussed. Or we agreed to something, and 1 minute later, he would do the exact opposite. I did go a little insane and completely lost myself.
So she wasn't very specific, but I'll tell you one thing as a therapist, if someone says to me, I did go insane and I lost myself, then I really want to pay attention to that.
Yes.
And I really am going to pay good attention to that. And I am going to suspect very strongly that that is gaslighting.
Yes.
Because she is saying that quickly after a conversation, he's denying that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be gaslighting.
Yeah, I think the part for me where I'm like, yeah, that to me, there's definitely something very toxic there, is because is the feeling she has. That to me, that's telling. Sometimes you can express it, you don't even know where to begin. But it's when someone tells you, I find, actually, that's something I meant to ask you. Do you think that I guess especially when it's a parent doing it, because, you know, the history is so long, you know, that the person who've known you the longest in your life, but also maybe with a partner, do you think that sometimes there's almost a bit of amnesia going on where you're like, you don't really, you know, it's like, I don't remember. Did we talk about this? You know, is there a bit of amnesia sometime going on?
We actually have a term for that, and we do call it abuse amnesia. And it's because it happens a lot. And again, it has to do with that cognitive dissonance. You end up being in this constant state of self-doubt and confusion because of the gaslighting. It happens almost daily, to tell you the truth, in these relationships. And so that's why you end up having abuse amnesia.
Yeah.
So this particular audience member wrote that she records and documents, and that's what we encourage people to do if they choose to stay in that relationship, or they're not wanting to leave their job, or if it's a parent. We do recommend that as something to protect themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just see here. Sorry, this is, I'm just like, I'm a little bit gobsmacked. I think there's a lot of things. It's making me think a lot.
I tell you, there is like so much information on this.
Yeah.
It just goes on and on.
But you see, but this is why I think it's so important to make this discernment, because it's a little bit like, because I think the reason why I felt so strongly about doing this and how I feel so strongly about, you know, people just using terms and calling people narcissists or saying they've been gaslighted when they weren't, because it really completely like disempower people who really are. And I think a lot of things that you mentioned and the gravity of a situation is not to be messed around with. And I think people crying wolf, they don't mean to, by the way. And I'm not talking about necessarily about the submissions, but I think in general, when you see, you know, on social media or the media in general or whatever, people throwing terms out like they're nothing. When someone who's, it's a bit like when, you know, people used to have this pet peeves of mine was like, people say, oh, they have OCD. I'm like, darling, unless you're actually sweating and you don't care how it looks like, you do not have OCD. Like, you know, like people just
Comes out. Oh, yeah.
Just because you like things clean doesn't mean you're OCD, okay? It's like there's a whole different dimension to it. And I think because it's so, you know, and I guess like, you know, part of me, I think maybe sometimes when I couldn't even see was gaslighting. It's actually, I've actually with the whirlwind. Because I've been that person who's been on the receiving end of the whirlwind, and I really was questioning myself, even though I know like he had issues. But sometimes you can't even see it because it's almost the normal, you know, the norm. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to make differences.
I've actually really leaned towards calling it hidden abuse more than narcissistic abuse for that very reason. I'm actually obligated to a code of ethics to not diagnose someone I don't work with.
Yeah.
And so I prefer hidden abuse for that very reason. I don't know the other partner. I work with the victim. And yes. So it's, you know, completely irresponsible for me to hear what my client's saying and then labeling that other person who I've never met. And I don't want to jump to conclusions either. So, you know, it takes a while for me to even say anything about their partner.
Yeah.
I'm going to be completely focused on my client and what's going on with him or her.
Mm. Yeah. So what I'd like to do now is just do a couple of discernment in terms of like, you know, someone who's a secure person versus a pushover, compassionate versus coddling, you know, those kind of like what can be healthy to like being, you know, toxic and becoming a target. So I want to do that. And then I want to then finish up with like, what are the next steps? If someone who's listening to this recognize that they're in a situation like this, so they are, you know, suffering from multiple PTSD or being gaslighted and so on, what are the next steps so that we can, you know, help them like that? So, so what I like to ask you, how would you define the line between a secure person, you know, with a healthy confidence and, oh, do you know what? Actually, I know the answer now.
Okay.
You said
share with me.
Basically, my question originally was, what are the lines between a secure person who is not a pushover and someone who gaslights you? So the reason why my question was this is because, you know, of some of the submissions where I'm sure actually the guy, you know, didn't do nothing wrong. You basically being, so actually the difference is a secure person's not going to like project everything and target you and tell you you're stupid and insecure. Mm-hmm. They'll just say, look, in my opinion, they'll just say, look, I'm sorry. Obviously, I don't mean to upset you. That's not what I meant. But this is where I stand. And this is why I think, you know, this is why I think I'm right. But, you know, let's talk about this.
Yeah. And, you know, some of the really big flags that are going to be obvious even up front and throughout are, some people have called them mantrums.
Say that again. A what?
Mantrums.
What's that? Hear that? No. How'd you spell that?
A grown man having a tantrum.
Oh, mantrum.
Yeah. And
listen, they have their own periods as well, you know?
Yes.
Not just us.
And so, and I don't want to sound like, you know, just targeting men.
No.
But because I don't know if they say woman trum, but you have a grown person that, and this obviously is for men and women, that is, you're having to tell them the golden rule. treat others as you want to be treated over and over again. And that is just a huge sign that you're with somebody, you know, who is toxic. And as far as, you know, keeping yourself from being a target, the biggest thing people can do is to, I'd like to tell my clients, when you're dating, remember, we like to use slogans in therapy so that they are memorable.
Yeah.
But I always say slow to grow. So take your time in the relationship, because the true personality doesn't really come fully out until later.
Yeah.
And so it's so important to take time, but to always have boundaries and don't, you know, do what you think they want you to do. Just be yourself. And, you know, often people, when they're dating, they don't want to say or do something because they're afraid of what the other person will do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the worst thing you can do. That's actually a good thing, because that's process of elimination.
Yeah. But you know what? Absolutely. And I think also that if you really like someone, or if someone really likes you, they don't want to scare you away. They're going to try and reel it in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're not going to try and come full force, because I'm not saying it doesn't, like, yeah, like, you know, like we said, like sometimes whirlwind does work out, you know, if you hit the jackpot, but most case scenario, everybody knows that if you say, I love you after 2 weeks or 3 weeks, most people are going to think you're crazy a little bit. I mean, not quote unquote crazy diagnosed, but they're going to think that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of love to be taking in there. And
yes.
So actually someone, I think, who actually really likes you, they may be, and that's men or women, they may be a little bit more shy about it. You may not completely always know. And like you said, slow to grow. And they also want to see, I think that's maybe a way of saying, seeing someone is healthy. They want to check for themselves that they're actually giving their love to someone that's worthy of them. That's
absolutely,
you know, worthy may be the wrong way, but like, you know, that they have to, you have to qualify someone. It's like a job interview. You qualify, you know, you're going to do your best and you're going to show up, but you are going to, the commitment comes later.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah. I like that you said that, because what I've noticed too, is that people have a double standard and they have these expectations of the other person that they're not willing to meet themselves.
Mm.
And, you know, reciprocity is one of the most important things in any kind of relationship. And so, you know, we teach mutual respect in therapy, you know, yes, in order to have good relationships.
But you know, interestingly, this is based on something you were saying earlier. I'm just thinking about this now, and I don't want to forget it. So sorry if it's coming at a lot of time, but you know, when we were talking about those scenarios where the woman, you know, she expressed something that she wasn't happy with and bam, it was game over.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if those dynamics, and maybe also other dynamics where someone finds it hard to express what they want and need, I wonder if that also sometimes can be because they've been so used to every time they've done it, they were just thrown back in their face, like as if, like, what, you know, they're not used to have. They used to either be neglected, overlooked, you know, whether it's, you know, when they were growing up. And so that side of them that's not used to putting their foot down without fear of being abandoned, that also enables a toxic dynamic and it enables people who are naturally gaslighter and they'll get targeted more.
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you just said that, Angie, because I don't think we said that anywhere in this. And that is like the best point you could make, because that is how somebody would kind of get stuck into this relationship.
Yeah.
And how they would kind of be a chameleon is that they are so accustomed to not having a voice, and that there's, you know, how I said earlier that in their childhood, their identity was around surviving whatever parent was the abuser.
Yeah.
And so that's what would happen here in their adult relationships. So that is a really good point that they are like innately accustomed to, you know, molding into whatever they need to.
It's familiarity.
So unfortunately, they're malleable and they shouldn't be.
Yeah. And that, so how do you, okay, so let's jump right into like, how do we help ourselves? How do we fix this? Because, you know, we want to, you know, there's a life to be lived, you know, there's love to be had. There's wonderful people out there, you know, I mean, we've got to believe it.
Oh yeah.
And there are wonderful people out there. But I think I'm going to ask this in two layers, because one is, how if someone recognizes themselves in this and they want to break that circle, one is, it's very well to be told, okay, what do we do? But two, how do we also learn to, and I say we, I mean people and humans in general, learn to be attracted to what's healthy? Because that's going to be such a different phenomenon, and it's going to feel weird and icky at first. So how do we help ourselves, and how do we learn to know what's good for us? Learn to know what's good for us.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a great point. And I don't know where I saw this quote, but I grabbed it and it's on my Instagram, and this is what it says. It's okay to be scared, but you have to get out there, open up, love, make mistakes, learn, be stronger, and start all over again. And I think that's just so true. It's so human for us to not want to start all over again. We love to avoid, you know, pain. But what that does is it makes us avoid joy and love. And we are wired for that. We are wired for connection. And so I'm a firm believer, obviously, in going to therapy. We have really good techniques to help people recover from trauma.
What kind of therapy would you go to? Because there's so many different types of therapies out there now. What would you recommend? Like the most impactful and sustainable therapy for victims and survivors and thrivers, eventually thrivers of being gaslighted, whether you grew up with it or you had a relationship from it? You had a bad relationship, sorry.
Right. So to really go to somebody who's trauma trained, I think that's really important, because those are the most sustainable types of treatment that are out there. They're going to be neurobiological. And so we have EMDR, and that's eye movement desensitization reprogramming. And that is a very incredible trauma treatment that desensitizes the traumas that one has endured, whether past or present. And it goes to whatever traumas are there. It allows your brain to heal itself. You don't have to dig something up. It's just whatever's there.
It sounds like tapping a little bit. It sounds like what you do when you EFT.
It's similar. So you can use eye movements. And then there's tappers. It's almost like the TENS unit, but it's
what's
not.
The TENS unit? What's that?
Have you ever used a TENS unit like in physical therapy where they put the pad on you and it vibrates?
Maybe. I don't know.
So what this is you have these little pads that you hold in your hand and they vibrate, but it's not uncomfortable. It's not everybody, when I do that, I'm an EMDR trained therapist. And so when I talk to them about it, they're like, oh my God, is it going to shock me? It's a gentle vibration and the client gets to choose the intensity. So there's that.
Although to be quite honest, sometimes you probably want to be electrocute the memories out of your mind, you know?
But really we really like to do things in a safe way and at the client's pace.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because otherwise it would be very intrusive and dangerous.
Oh, of course. I was only joking when I said that. I didn't mean to.
No, I know.
So sorry. Yeah.
And there's somatic trauma training, and it's amazing all these kind. And then there's brain spotting, and those are very sustainable because, again, they're actually going to the core trauma and they're desensitizing it. And so those are really incredible. And then there's always trauma, cognitive behavioral therapy.
So I'm going to put those things in the show notes, by the way. So I'm going to ask you to email them to me as well, so I can
okay,
in the show
yeah.
notes. But I think this is helpful. So someone would go to, so it's called a trauma trained therapist, right? And so trauma trained therapists can mm-hmm. work on your biological therapies, and those are like EMDR, the PADS, the somatic, the brain spotting, and the TCBT. Is that what you mean? So yeah. if someone was to Google it and they go, okay, well, I found someone, it says traumatic trauma therapist, and they also do EMDR, for example. Is that yes. what you mean by that's how you'd go in? You can choose brain spotting, for example. You can choose whatever yeah. you feel more called for. Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And I always tell people to interview the therapist. So pick yes. about three, because this is someone that you're going to be working with over a long period of time, possibly. And so you want to feel comfortable. You want to feel safe. You want to trust this person. So that's important. And other ways are to really do a lot of education, but don't immerse yourself, because that can get very overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit like when people do over-testing, like, you know, like, because I'm a health coach. So sometimes people, they come to me and they want to test for everything. And I'm like, why? And I don't actually give out tests, but they'll say, oh, you know, I want to test. I'm like, actually sometimes, because I've been that person. And sometimes if you dig too deep, when you then have all these results and you take them to someone who doesn't know how to read tests properly. And that's even people who are qualified, because that's the thing, is how to make a diagnosis from it, or how to read those is a different thing. Same with x-ray, mm-hmm. you know, you can teach someone to take an x-ray, but can they read the x-ray? That's the discernment between an amazing person and someone who just learned it. So sometimes same thing with that testing, you can just go and look for too many things and you'll find one thing and it sounds like a problem when it's not, because it's taken out of context. So I think maybe also if we Google too much, we can go crazy.
Right.
Yeah. And we'll be like, oh my God.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we can traumatize ourselves almost.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have anybody to be there to help you, you know, manage your emotions.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's the first is okay. So the therapy, and the second part of the question is, how would you, so let's say if you come out of a relationship, you've been gaslighted, or you've had, you know, hidden abuse, mm-hmm. And let's say that's been your pattern your whole life, or most of your life, for example, too. What would you tell someone to start to, because it's one thing to go out there and keep an open heart, but we have to protect ourselves and use discernment. So how do we, I mean, I believe anyway, so how do we start to learn to love what's healthy for us versus what's familiar but unhealthy?
We tell people to really learn self-compassion. And so what that looks like is really taking good care of yourself, just like what you would tell a friend. And so that would be, well, you're a health coach, right?
Yes.
And so that would be doing everything to make yourself healthy again. So looking at how you eat, looking at your daily habits, making sure that you're sleeping well, hydrating, exercising, and how do you talk to yourself? Mm. And so really making sure that you're doing all of that and doing it well for a long period of time, because more than likely those things all went out the window during that relationship. And so it's really building yourself back up, because more likely your self-concept was eviscerated. So the first and foremost is to rebuild you again. And so that is done by self-compassion. And that's something that we can do on our own.
Yeah.
Also, I think that learning mindfulness and then doing, you know, guided meditation, those are also things that we can do at home. And the titles to use would be, you know, self-compassion, radical acceptance, and self-love. Those would be the ones that would be very important to use.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, because I think, you know, therapy is not accessible to everyone. You know, it could just be because of geography and, or sometimes it's finance, you know, most of the time will be finance, you know. So I think like you, all the things you said of, you know, I like that because I think it's also sending out a message, not just to yourself, but to the world outside. And once you start looking after yourself, it shows, you know, people how you want to be treated.
Oh, absolutely.
Or what you'd accept, because if you don't do that for yourself, it sends out a different message. It doesn't justify people's action, but you are, until you see what abuse looks like, you cannot, and once you've seen it, you can, it's really hard to unsee it, right? And I think
exactly
once you see yourself, you know, it's going to be, you're going to start to unsee yourself again, but you'll little by little learn to see yourself more and more and love yourself. And I definitely recommend things like, you know, everyone's going to have their own thing that they resonate with, but I really like her books, Gabby Bernstein. I don't necessarily enjoy her videos. I don't resonate with her in videos, but I bought a few of her books and I think her books are wonderful. And actually I need to actually go back and do them. They have like a little exercise you do every day. And I think, yeah, things like that, you know, buy a book is what, $10 or less. You know, that's one place to start, you know, it's one place to start, you know, have some healthy food, try and, you know, try to eat a bit more healthy a little bit and wash your face.
Yeah. So there's a book. I have a couple books that I recommend. So one, a couple for education would be Why Does He Do That? By Lundy, L-U-N-D-Y Bancroft.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shannon Thomas wrote Healing from Hidden Abuse. And Jackson McKenzie wrote a book, Whole Again, W-H-O-L-E.
Oh, I love that word. That's, yeah, whole again.
Isn't it awesome?
Yes.
So I use that for my women's group. And that's something else that they can do. Sometimes there are support groups for survivors of abuse.
Oh, there's usually free support groups?
Yeah.
Oh,
and also sometimes there are therapy groups, and group therapy is often less expensive than individual therapy.
Of course.
So that's another option.
Okay.
And let's see, for parents that are narcissists, one of a great book to read is Shadow Daughter.
Oh.
Gotta reach down to get it real quick. One moment. And it's a memoir of estrangement by Harriet Brown.
So that's called Shadow Daughter. That's for those who've experienced gaslighting by a parent.
From a parent.
Mm-hmm. Because I was going to ask you, there may be some different books for family gaslighting and then partner related. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to ask you the two rounding up questions I ask all my guests. What would you say to your 18-year-old self?
That's so good. So what I would say to my 18-year-old self is, you are amazing the way that you are. You're strong. You're beautiful. You're courageous. You're smart. And stay you.
Yeah, that's really nice. And the second one is, what do you not put up with anymore?
Oh, I love that too. Toothpaste in the sink. No,
oh, yeah. That is annoying though. That is annoying.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not the little things.
Yeah, right. So I really don't like intolerance, right? But I don't put up with people who are very judgmental. Mm-hmm. And I don't react to it with anger. But what I do is I just know that I need to put up some boundaries. I also, instead of not putting up with, I'm not afraid to speak up. And so I know how to speak up in an empowering way. And I don't disempower myself and I don't disempower others because I want to make sure that I'm empowering change. I want to make a difference.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, you know, approach situations in that manner. And so that's more of, you know, what I'm doing instead of not putting up with is that I am inserting courage and intention. So what I mean is that I understand, you know, why people do the things that they do.
Yeah.
And instead of saying I'm not going to put up with it, I am going to have boundaries. Mm-hmm. But I'm also going to be courageous enough to, if I'm uncomfortable, to set that boundary.
Yes.
And to have a voice and to speak up.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Well, Shannon, thank you so much. Yeah, I actually learned things on the call today. I had questions. I was like, oh, she's already answered those. It's almost like I got more clarity. So I want to say thank you so much. And I hope, you know, I really, really hope it's the same for the listeners. Like, really, thank you so much. This was really, really insightful. Before we go, can you please tell us where people can find you and, you know, how they can work with you and can they work, you know, it's a very international listener space. If they can, you know, if you can do stuff like on Skype or Zoom or whatever, let us know, please. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you so much for having me and letting me, you know, play out my passion for educating people about this. And people can reach me. I have an Instagram that's Shannon Higgins LPC. And I really try to put up motivating things with some lessons on there. I also put some short snippets on a nonprofit organization called choosecourage.com. And their program is absolutely amazing. And they too want to educate people about how to recognize signs and what to do. And my website is unlockingfortitude.com. And my private practice is Unlocking Fortitude. And so all the contact information is on the website.
And because you're based in Texas, can people who live, for example, in England or Asia, can they work with you online?
They can. They can set up a consultation for, you know, coaching. And that is something that I do on a telehealth program. So if they want to call and receive any kind of, you know, education, any kind of consultation around this topic, they can definitely get that information. My assistance number is on my website, and so she can get all that set up.
Thank you so much, Shannon. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Really, it was a true pleasure having you on.
Thank you, Angie.
Yeah,
you made it so easy.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please don't forget to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, follow on Spotify, for all the other platforms, whichever way you show love is how you can support this show. Drop me your questions or suggestions for future episodes via the website at angie-s.com or come and find me on Instagram. I have two accounts. One is Too Old for This Shit Podcast and the other one is Not Too Old For with the number 4. Links in the show notes. See you next week, and until then,
use in health, inappropriate lane.